Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed. So you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome to Not Alone. I am Valeria Lipovetsky, and today I'm sitting down with Dr. Sarah Reardon, aka the Vagina Whisper. I have to tell you, I did not expect to learn as much as I did during our conversation. Sarah is an amazing practitioner. She worked with thousands of women suffering from pelvic floor problems. She is a doctor of physical therapy and board certified women's health and pelvic floor therapist. When I sat down with her, I didn't know that I belong to the thousands of women who are suffering from pelvic floor problems. And the more we talked about it, I was like, oh, okay, there's so much to learn. We all make jokes about how we jump and we pee a little bit. I mean, this is for all the mothers out there that gave life through their vaginas. We all joke about it all the time. You sneeze, you pee, you jump, you pee. Like, you know, you have to choose your fitness classes wisely. But I wasn't aware that it's a real health issue that we want to discuss and talk about among women and start demanding more support on that, right? So I remember when I used to go to my doctor, my OBGYN, no one talked to me about pelvic floor therapy or any issues that I can expect. I just thought that this is just what happens when you give birth. I am extremely excited for you to listen to this. Even if it doesn't touch you directly right now, it will at some point. But also, just knowing and learning these things, you are able to have conversation and support your friends, your loved ones. You know, this is what it's all about. So let's get into it with the Vagina Whisper. Well, hello, Dr. Sarah Reardon. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to talk about all things pelvic health.
I know. I have to say, I was secretly expecting you to show up in your vulva costume.
You know, I get that a lot. I feel like it doesn't fit on screen. So just the top of the vulva doesn't quite show the same way as the full picture. But yes, it's a wonderful costume and a great way to educate all about pelvic floor health and the vagina and all the wonderful things we're going to chat about.
So is that where it came from? The idea of like trying to bring a visual aspect to your teaching?
It's actually the opposite. So I am a pelvic health physical therapist, and my friends, when we were all having babies and I was starting in this field, called me the Vagina Whisper because they would come to me with all of their questions about pregnancy and postpartum and peeing their pants. And then as I got on social media and started just doing more education about this, my sister, who's in marketing, found the vagina costume, the vulva costume, was like, you have to wear this. And I was like, okay. So that's it. Really, you know, it started more with education that went more kind of in the fun direction.
I love it. Tied it all together. I think that it's a very important part of your whole, you know, education project. So the Vagina Whisper, I love it. Very catchy. I wish I met you or saw your teaching earlier on in my journey. But I do know that it's such a valuable, important information. Most of my followers are young women that are either pregnant currently or planning to get pregnant, or even, you know, planning on future children. And you don't find this information available everywhere. So I would love to know first, how did you get started? What attracted you to specializing in pelvic floor?
It's a great question. So as I mentioned, I'm a pelvic floor physical therapist, but my training initially started in just physical therapy, which is studying the body, helping people move, helping people function. And I happened to have a professor who specialized at the time in what we called women's health. And I think as a woman, it just helped me understand my own body. Like, oh, when you pee, you shouldn't push. Or when you're pregnant, you can still exercise, but you need to make modifications. So I think I just naturally had that interest sparked in me. And then I did we call them residencies or rotations during our training. And I did one in pelvic health and working with the patients and helping them understand their bodies and providing a safe space for them to talk about painful intercourse or their fears about childbirth or having babies and their bodies going through so many changes. I just recognized so many people are going through this, but nobody's talking about it. And there's actually help for it. And physical therapy was one of those options for help. And so it just helped me get really passionate about, like, I think everybody should know that this is available. I think everybody should be getting this education as women, as young children, as even males have pelvic health issues. So just really, like, how can we help inform people more about this part of our body that we don't really talk about, but goes through so many changes over a woman's lifespan?
Hi guys, let's talk about one of today's sponsors, Peak. So if you guys know, been following me for a while, you know that I go through this really weird up and down relationship with coffee. As I get older, I'm becoming more and more sensitive to it, and the jittery feelings and the crashes up and down just don't do this for me anymore. If you've watched any of my previous vlogs, I was using Peak Matcha and discovered it a long time ago and been loving the product. And I just learned that they came out with a brand new coffee replacement called Nandaka. And let me tell you, it's been a game changer. So once I put it to the test, I have learned a couple of lessons. Number one, it has a very creamy, spiced, hot chocolate flavor, which I really liked. Feels like a dessert. And it gives you a slow release caffeine, which gives you the sustained energy and doesn't create those jittery feelings I'm trying to move away from. It also has functional mushrooms and adaptogens, which really helps with hormonal balance and helps support clear and radiant skin. The reason why I fell in love with Peak in the first place was they use high quality pure ingredients for maximized benefits. The Nandaka coffee replacement has up to 30% cacao butter, which helps with better absorption and curbing sugar cravings. We all have those. And up to 20 times concentrated mushroom extract for stress relief and hormonal balance. I'm here for it. So if you want to give Peak a try for a limited time, you can get 15% off Nandaka, a free rechargeable frother and a cup when you shop my link peaklife.com/Valeria. That's peaqueulife.com/Valeria for 15% off Nandaka, a free rechargeable frother and a cup. So let's go back to basics and introduce pelvic floor to those who don't know where it is and what it is.
Okay. So let's bring out my model. And I think that this is a great way to kind of just explain how important the pelvic floor is and all of the day-to-day functions that it assists with. So this is the bony pelvis. So we're all used to seeing, you know, what we consider the pelvis, and at the very bottom of this pelvis is a basket of muscles. And this is what we consider the pelvic floor. So it sits at the very bottom of your pelvis, like a hammock, and it supports your pelvic organs, including your uterus, which holds a growing baby during pregnancy, your bladder, which holds urine, your bowels, which hold poop. And so it's supporting all of those organs during the day. It also has the sphincters for the urethra, which is where urine exits the body, the vaginal opening for menstruation, vaginal birth, and vaginal intercourse, and then the anal opening for poops. So it holds in pee and poop during the day. It relaxes to urinate, to have bowel movements, to have a vaginal birth, and it supports your organs and a growing baby. So we can see how pregnancy would change this as the muscle stretches and lengthens, or how a vaginal birth can change this if you have a perineal tear, or hormones can change this with aging. So there's just a lot of ways that this muscle can get weak and lead to leakage or prolapse, or can get too tight and lead to pain and painful sex.
It's mind-blowing to me how we never, like, this just hasn't been such a huge topic, because from everything that you've mentioned, I mean, it supports us throughout a whole lifetime and is responsible to so many crucial functions of the body. And I heard you say how we shouldn't be normalizing pelvic floor problems. We ought to be normalizing pelvic floor conversations. So where do you feel like we're normalizing pelvic floor problems? How does that manifest itself?
Well, I think that that's been the narrative for women for so long that, oh, you pee your pants, that's just a normal part of aging as a woman. Oh, or, oh, sex hurts after having a baby, welcome to motherhood. Oh, you know, periods are painful and messy. Oh, that's just, you know, part of having a period. It's felt like these issues have often been dismissed. It feels like we're just supposed to accept these changes to our body, but yet there are options for help, and pelvic floor therapy is one of those options. And I think that, you know, when we see commercials or advertisements for leakage and urinary pads for them, or even medications to take, it's a lot about treating the symptoms, but not really treating the problem or the root cause. And so they become issues that we don't talk about, that we feel ashamed of, that are embarrassing, because we feel like we just kind of have to hide them or deal with them in secrecy, versus saying like, oh, hey, I have this issue. I know who to go talk to about it. I know who to go see about it. A lot of women experience it, yes, but a lot of women can get help for it as well.
Where do you think that shame comes from?
You know, it's hard to say. I think that historically, you know, there's an analogy for, you know, moms having babies. It's like, you know, there's so much care given to the mom during pregnancy, but once you have the baby, there's no aftercare. There's barely a 5-minute postpartum visit that 40% of women don't even attend. So that means we don't even see the value of it sometimes. So it's often felt like, you know, once the baby's here, it's like the mom's the wrapper to the candy that just gets tossed to the side. So I think that it comes from not paying attention to the issues that women have from the medical system. It comes from, these are really intimate parts of our body. We're not always comfortable talking about peeing or pooping or sex. And I think it also comes from mainstream media that, you know, what we see is, you know, hot, racy sex, but the reality of it, 1 in 4 women have pain with sex at some point in their lifetime. Or that, you know, childbirth is just every woman grunting and screaming on a bed, and then water just gushes out of her vagina when her water breaks. And that's not really the picture of how it looks. So it's always looked kind of scary or icky, versus thinking, hey, these are some normal functions of the body, but when they're not functioning well, how can we address them?
Hi guys, let's pause and chat real quick about today's sponsor, Bird and Bee. One of my absolute favorite things about this community that we've built together is our ability to openly talk and share the reality of life as women. And I know a lot of you are at this time in your life where you're thinking about a family, you're planning, or you're already in the process. That's why I'm so excited to talk to you about Bird and Bee. We've all been educated and know that we need to take good care of ourselves during pregnancy, usually like a prenatal, but what about a health check before you get pregnant? When it comes to conceiving, we all know that it all starts with an egg and a sperm. It's important to know that lifestyle habits, including getting the right nutrients, can support the health of the egg and the sperm. Bird and Bee makes research-backed supplements to support both female and male fertility, because we can't forget it takes two. Bird and Bee's formula include all the ingredients that their team of fertility doctors and naturopaths wish that their patients were taking. So instead of Googling around for what to take or booking expensive consultations, you can get it all in one doctor-formulated product. Bird and Bee's The Power Prenatal for females has all the essential nutrients to optimize your reproductive health, including proven antioxidants like CoQ10 and NAC to support egg health. And my favorite part is that there's also a supplement to support sperm health. It's called The Powers for Males, which really matters, especially considering that up to 50% of infertility cases involve issues with sperm. The ingredients are top-notch, and instead of buying a dozen different bottles and sorting through all the pills, Birds and Bees supplements come in daily grab-and-go packets. They also offer subscription, which scores you free shipping on subscription, plus 10% off each monthly box, so you don't run out. And at only $40, this is a no-brainer to empower yourself with more information. So if you want to give Bird and Bee a try, they gave me a special code just for Not Alone listeners. Just go to birdandbee.com and use code NOTALONE15 to save 15% off your first purchase. That's birdandbe.com with code NOTALONE15 for 15% off your first purchase. I mean, I remember my visits to the doctor, and obviously none of these topics were ever discussed. How would you even suggest for women to advocate for themselves with, you know, in the medical field when they go see their doctors?
Well, I think the first step is recognizing that we really have to be the drivers in our own healthcare. So, and I think you probably have experienced this, and I know that I have during my pregnancies and birth, that, you know, I don't think that we can always look to the doctors or the medical system to really give us the answers. We have to do a lot of the research on our own, just like we research sleeping schedules or the best postpartum leggings or the best sleep sack. We really need to do that for our own healthcare as well, instead of thinking that, you know, we just have to listen to what one person says. So I think the first thing is knowing who to talk to. The first thing is we don't even know what physician to go to if we have a problem. So asking your doctor, hey, I'm experiencing leakage during exercising. Is this normal? Or I have some back pain during pregnancy. Is this normal? And kind of saying, instead of accepting that this is normal, going to a medical provider and asking the question. And if you feel like it's not addressed appropriately and they say, oh, this just is normal, and say, well, who can I go see for help? What are my options for help? Is it medication? Is it exercise? Is it pelvic floor therapy? Not thinking that we just have to exist with these problems, because they affect our quality of life. And then I think that really talking to other moms and other women is often our greatest referral source. I mean, I think that this is how we find out about these options. Just sharing our stories with other women or people who have been through our experiences is where we often find answers.
Looking back, I mean, I had my first child almost 11 years ago, and boy, did I know nothing. Definitely felt a sense of shame to even ask those questions, because I guess for me, I just assumed that if anything is important enough, the doctor will bring it up. So when they don't bring it up, you're just like, oh, this is kind of just going to wait until it's gone. But there wasn't a lot of, to your point, there wasn't a lot of resources. I was talking to my mom about certain things, but I didn't really get the feeling that there's the support and the care for that fourth trimester for women, right? Once you have the baby, and then you get a lot of information about how to take care of the baby, but you don't get really no information about how to heal your body. Like, that was a big shocker for me. And I remember that I heard about pelvic floor from my Pilates instructor. She was the one that was just like, hey, where, you know, how does it feel? She was really doing very subtle movements with me, and I couldn't, it didn't connect for me. But that was my introduction to that, my Pilates instructor, which is amazing. So definitely having women around you that can share and support with their own kind of view and their own experience was very detrimental. But I do still feel like I am still trying to grapple with the damage that I've caused to my body. Is that something that women kind of have to go through for a long time post-baby? Is there a way to fix it?
First of all, I'm so sorry that you had that experience, but I assure you, you are not alone. And I think even 11 years later, so many women and moms, including myself, feel that way. I mean, I'm in this field. I've been a pelvic health therapist for 17 years now. And when I had my first son 8 years ago, I was like, I know what's going on with my body. And this is still really hard and really lonely. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of that isolation of feeling like so alone makes us feel like we're the only ones who have gone through it, because we don't really talk about it. And I see that shifting and changing. The fact that we're able to come on here and talk about vulvas and vaginas and pelvic floors means we are normalizing these conversations. So I think that one of the other ways to think about advocating for your body and getting some of the results for change is also thinking about your medical team or your support team is not just a physician anymore. It is a pelvic health therapist. It can be a lactation specialist. It can be a movement therapist or an exercise instructor. And really thinking, or a postpartum doula, really thinking about the care support team. Because once you go home from the hospital or the birthing center, it's just you. And that physician or nurse is not really readily available for you. So really thinking about building that support team during pregnancy and then also postpartum. And then I think that really helps us, one, start to understand a little bit more about what happens to our bodies. When it comes to thinking about the damage, which is makes me sad because I feel like we sacrifice so much to have children, and knowing that we also have to do that in a very physical sense is emotional. And that is something that we have to deal with, these day-to-day issues that have come up from birth. But I think one, understanding our bodies is the first step. Like, is this normal? Why did this happen? And then we start getting to some of the solutions of, oh, do I need pelvic floor exercises? Do I need, you know, a pessary or an organ support to help with leakage? Do I need to consider surgery? You know, if I do have surgery, how can I maximize the benefit of that or make sure that it's successful and effective? And so really thinking about, one, how do I get to the root of the problem? And two, what are my steps for treatment? I think really helps us feel empowered in that journey instead of feeling like we are damaged and that we can do something. You can absolutely improve these symptoms years and decades later. We may not get our pre-pregnancy vaginas back, but just like we wouldn't want to get our pre-pregnancy lives back, right? Like, so much has changed, but how can we better manage our symptoms and feel really strong in a different way as moms?
I am so excited to talk about today's sponsor, Element. As you guys know, I moved to Miami, and I have to say, I had to relearn this whole like health and wellness here, specifically with hydration, because it gets so humid, so hot, especially when I work out outside or honestly just move around outside. I lose a lot of water, which means I sweat a lot. I heard it's good for you. But what I've learned is healthy hydration is not just about water. It's about replenishing water and electrolytes, which makes total sense because you sweat out water and sodium, and they both need to be replaced because otherwise you get the muscle cramps, you get the headaches, you get the energy dips, and I can't afford that, honestly. Another thing that I've learned, which was very interesting, is we've been always recommended to drink up to 8 cups a day, and I thought that it's mandatory. Apparently, drinking beyond thirst is a bad idea. See, we live and we learn, because it dilutes blood electrolyte levels, and that takes us back to the problems we want to avoid, like headaches, lower energy, cramps, confusion. So the solution is being mindful of your water consumption, but it's not to stop drinking water. It's about getting your water with electrolytes. And here is when Element comes into the picture. I've been making sure that every single bag that I own has Element packets. I also take them with me when I fly. That's actually mandatory, especially on planes. I don't like drinking a lot because you have to get up, get over the person you're sitting beside, go to the restroom. I don't like that inconvenience. So making sure that I have my water with electrolytes, I feel like I'm getting enough hydration without drinking obscene amounts of water. Some of my favorite flavors are the watermelon, the mango chili, the raspberry salt. You guys, so good. And just a little history lesson here. The product was created by a former researcher, biochemist, Rob Wolf, and KetoGains founder, Luis Villasenor. Element has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to make us feel better and perform our best. So there's zero sugar, no artificial colors, and no other ingredients that you absolutely can't pronounce and don't know what they are. And what I love about Element, I know I mentioned some of my favorite flavors, but they have such an amazing variety that you are guaranteed to find 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that you will absolutely love. So if you want to give Element a try, they came up with a fantastic offer for us. Just go to drinkelement.com/notalone and you get a free sample pack with any drink mix purchase. That's drinklmnt.com/notalone to get a free sample pack. Enjoy and let me know your favorite flavors. Did you feel like these conversations are more open in other cultures? Is that something that's also culture dependent?
You know, it's hard to say. I think that I've only practiced in the United States. I can say that one of the reasons I talk so openly about these issues is because I see 20 to 40 women a week in my clinic who have the same issues. So when you're seeing patient after patient who's coming in suffering with leakage or pain or prolapse, and they think that they're the only ones, I'm like, oh, well, the woman before you and the woman after you are also experiencing pelvic floor problems. So you're not alone. I think that in other countries, I would say that their postpartum care in some countries is definitely elevated more than ours, just from everything to maternity care coverage, healthcare coverage, affordable childcare, so that moms can, you know, go to the doctor or go to exercise classes or take care of their bodies, paid maternity leave. I mean, you can't take care of your body if you're just back to work 2 weeks later and you're literally still bleeding after birth. So I think other cultures systemically have more support for moms. But when I think of pelvic floor health in general, there are some countries and cultures that integrate pelvic floor therapy immediately after birth. And so I think just by having those options for mom available, that's recognizing that, hey, women do need this support physically after birth. It's not just about baby.
Do you feel any changes in the medical system of like just starting to pay more attention to it?
I think yes, but I don't think it's due to the medical system. I think it's due to women and moms advocating for themselves.
Yeah.
They're going to their providers and saying, I heard about this type of therapy. I want you to send me to somebody for it. And or I'm having another vaginal birth. My first one didn't go the way that I wanted it to. I want to work with a pelvic floor therapist to help me feel more prepared. So I really attribute this to moms and to women versus the medical system recognizing that we need support. I think it's us saying, hey, we deserve better and we want to make those changes.
I love it. And I mean, I know that you're leading the way to this change. And I mean, it inspired me so much. And I share so many of your videos with my friends that are either planning to get pregnant or are pregnant. And I think it's so extremely important because another thing is there is a lot of other aspects that happen to us when we don't notice the health of our pelvic floor, right? I mean, I know that you mentioned before that it can cause postpartum depression or it can contribute to any other mental health issues. Can you expand on that?
Absolutely. So, and it's interesting because I see a lot of support increasing for breastfeeding or lactation, but breastfeeding and lactation, the changes in your hormones and milk production affect your vulva and vagina, and it leads to vaginal dryness or thinning of the tissues, which can affect sex or infection. So, or I also see things about returning to exercise because that's really great for mental health. But if you're peeing your pants, you don't want to run or you don't want to go to the gym because you're self-conscious about leaking or smelling. So I see a lot of prescriptions and recommendations out there for how to help moms with their mental health. But at the same time, it's so connected to our physical bodies. If we're in pain, if we're feeling like something's falling out, if we are bleeding, if we are leaking, that we're not always even able to achieve those things or to focus on those things that may be beneficial for our mental health. There's a connection between urinary incontinence and postpartum depression, which makes sense, right? There's a connection between marital troubles and painful intercourse, which we know that relationships take a toll after, you know, your first year after birth. But if you can't be intimate because sex hurts, that can lead to relationship challenges and intimacy challenges. So I think that we want to focus on this physical piece because those ripples really do trickle into all of these other aspects of our lives that can affect our psychological and emotional well-being.
You were mentioning that in your TED Talk, actually, about the sex portion, where you had a patient that told you that she went to the doctor and she told them that having an intercourse hurts. And he suggested that a glass of wine and some lube would be a great solution. I honestly, when I heard it, I was like, yeah, that's what my doctor would probably say as well. Can you explain to me that connection with the painful sex and the pelvic floor?
Absolutely. So, and I think when we hear those things, which unfortunately still does exist, whether a woman's hearing, oh, just give it more time, or, you know, come back in 6 months, or use more lube. I mean, that's gaslighting. That's saying, hey, what you're experiencing doesn't deserve attention and care right now. And so that is an option, I think, an opportunity for someone to advocate for themselves more, either by seeing a different provider or seeking other resources. So we mentioned that the pelvic floor is this basket of muscles, but that group of muscles has the opening to the vagina. And often during pregnancy, those muscles get stretched out. But during birth, you can have a perineal tear, which is a laceration into the muscle. So a tear of the tissue at the opening of the vagina or in the labia. And as that scar tissue heals from the tear, that can lead to decreased relaxation of the muscles. Scar tissue doesn't heal the same way that pre-pregnancy or pre-torn tissue does.
Are those the tears that they basically like sew you up?
Yep. Okay. So if we're looking, I'll bring out my little model here. So the vaginal opening is here. And when you experience a perineal tear, this is the perineum, it often goes into the muscle here or into the muscle on the side. And for a small percentage of women, not to scare anyone, but it can actually go all the way to the anal sphincter. Mm-hmm. And so as they suture you up and sew you up, that muscle and tissue can get tight and tense, and that can lead to discomfort with inserting something in the vagina. Even a cesarean birth, the abdominals are so connected to the pelvic floor, so the tight tissue in the abdomen can also lead to tight tissues and muscles in the vagina. And so those are both ways that people can experience pain with sex. Also vaginal dryness from breastfeeding, menopause, using hormones, and then just muscle tension. You know, I get a lot of tension in my neck and shoulders and I get headaches. If you experience muscle tension in those pelvic floor muscles, it can also lead to difficulty having intercourse or pain with sex.
I do experience all of this. Oh my goodness. I got a lot of work to do.
I feel like a lot of people listening, I mean, we all have work to do. I'm the vagina whisperer and I have work to do. But I think, again, one of it is it's understanding our bodies. Why is this happening? Oh, it's literally a tight muscle. And then just really addressing it like any other part of our body, as if we had an ankle sprain or back pain.
Well, I love even what you mentioned where, you know, the gaslighting, where we don't look at these things as big deals. It's all like small little, oh, you pee when you run, or it's small little things that at the end of the day, you just kind of ignore and think they'll go away. We haven't been taught to add all of this up and try to understand the root cause of it. So even like learning all this information is, for me, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you and it's like I'm getting a clear picture of, you know, how my body, what it's been through and what is going through. And it's just absolutely fascinating. And honestly, with the whole incontinence, right, the urinary incontinence, I remember this being like just a normal joke we all have between moms, right? Where we see people doing certain things. Like I watched the other day this trampoline exercise class, and I'm just like, I could never. Like, how is that even possible? So it's definitely something that I just really never bothered to even ask the questions about. What's fascinating to me is that in your TED Talk, you mentioned that 20% of women have urinary leakage after childbirth. They're also twice as likely to experience postpartum depression.
Right.
There's that connection?
Yeah, there's that connection. Kind of how we mentioned earlier is that, I mean, if you think about it, if when you are leaking urine, your mind is consumed with that, right? It's very hard to be present. I know if I'm running or jogging or exercising, you can feel those leaks happening. And I think we've laughed about them because we want to make light of them. You know, we don't want it to be so heavy and serious. I think levity is an important part of talking about this part of our body. But I also think we also want to address it because 20% of women after giving birth experience leakage, but 50% of women after the age of 65 experience leakage. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that if we don't work to address it over time with aging, our muscles just get weaker and weaker, and we do end up in diapers and experiencing urinary tract infections or, you know, going to a nursing home because we're not able to take care of continence issues. So when I start thinking about the bigger quality of life issues, it is one of those things where we don't want to just not address it. You know, we want to laugh about it and be like, oh, I've got to do my exercises kind of thing, just like we would for anything else. So I think that there's definitely a connection between those two things. And I think that as we get older, you know, we're having babies later in life and we literally go from pregnancy to postpartum to perimenopause now, that we start to see these changes happen much more rapidly and we want to address them sooner than later.
Oh, that's such a good point. We are having babies later. I hope that at some point there's going to be workout classes that would just be pelvic floor. That would be the new trend, you know?
And I think we're moving towards that. I mean, my entire website is an exercise platform just for the pelvic floor, whether you're pregnant or postpartum or just had a hysterectomy or you're preparing for birth. And it's one of those things where I'm not a fitness instructor. I am a pelvic floor therapist. And so these are little 10-minute workout routines that just work on your pelvic floor. And I design them, one, because I'm a busy mom and I don't have 45 minutes a day to work on my pelvic floor and core. But also I have a mom who's in her 70s. And if she wants to work on this, like, are they simple and easy enough for her to get on the ground and do some things to work on her body? And so I think in my dream world, we would start this education for young women in high school, just like we talk about sex ed, we talk about pelvic health ed, and educate them on this part of their body. So if they know that something starts changing, leakage with exercise, pain with tampon insertion, pain with sex, painful periods, they know that, this isn't normal. This part of my body could be involved. I need to see a pelvic health physical therapist. And that pelvic health PT starts becoming so normal, it's like going to the dentist. It's just part of our healthcare model where we go in proactively, preventatively, and we're getting regular checkups because our body does change so much from year to year.
So for someone who's listening, who let's say have a teenager daughter, right? Is that something you would expose to them or bring them to see a therapist like yourself when they are in those years, the teenage years?
I think the first thing is, so most pelvic health physical therapists, we don't do internal work, so doing intravaginal, interrectal assessments until they're an adult. So at the age of 18, we can treat them externally with a parent in the room as a pediatric patient. But I think more just bringing out the pelvic model and saying, hey, there's a group of muscles here. It helps with peeing and pooping and sex and menstruation. So if you're experiencing issues in any of those arenas, there could be a muscle that's involved and we want to talk about it because there are specialists to help you. But I think we as the women and as the moms and the older generation, we have to understand this part of our body first and we have to be comfortable talking about it so that we're able to educate the next generation as well.
That's amazing. I can't wait for my sons to bring their girlfriends over. I'll be like, come sit down, honey. Let's talk about your pelvic floor.
I mean, and my kids, it's fascinating because these models are all over my house. And my kids, this is just a normal thing for them. I mean, it's everything from they're like, hey, mom, why do you not have a penis? And I'm like, well, because mommies have vaginas and this is where my baby was born. They're like, I thought the baby was in your belly. I'm like, well, this is where it comes out of the body. And it won't, you know, if they have female partners later on, they'll know what a tampon is. They'll know what a period is. They'll know, you know, I have in my office right now, like my kid comes to work with me and he's like, always pee, but only when you need to, you know? Because I'm always like, don't pee just in case, only go when you have the urge. So again, it's like, if we know better, then we can do better and we can teach the next gen to also know better.
I know that kids have these things in classrooms where they ask, oh, what does your mommy do? Or, you know, what do your kids write? Did you have an example of that? A vagina whisper?
Some of it is she gets me snacks. That's her job.
Yeah.
That's her first job. So yeah, they do know that I'm the vagina whisperer for sure. And they'll say she helps people with their pelvic floors is what they'll say.
Amazing.
So, but they know, I mean, vagina whispers all over our home. It's on my office door. So they're very comfortable with the terminology. And we actually had a play date with a group of friends. And one of them said, oh, Sarah, your son came to school. And he was saying, oh, yeah, the vagina looks like a butt, but it's just smaller. And I think he's just used to seeing me without my clothes on. And there's like, a crack in the front, a crack in the back. But it's like, I was like, oh, my gosh, my six-year-old is going to school talking about this, you know? And I'm like, he's not wrong, but I don't
know
if
it's wrong. I mean, this is going to be the first step, you know, into changing the way we talk about it. He's taking away the shame. He just says it how it is. This is how the wheels of change happen. Let's talk actually about the birth, because I think that a lot for me personally changed after I gave birth. I think that there was a lot of physical and emotional changes that were hard to deal with, but then the physical were definitely difficult to deal with. And as you know, we all know, we go to the doctor, they give you the green light after 6 weeks. Okay, you're good to go. You can go and have sex again. And I have to say that ride back home after that appointment was the longest ride of my life. I was just all these thoughts and all these emotions, a lot of anxiety about it. Because again, didn't know what state my body was in and how to even approach it. Right. How do you suggest for us women to take care of ourselves emotionally and physically at that point?
So I think that the 6 week time frame is a completely arbitrary and nebulous number. There is no.
Where did it come from? Do you know?
I have no idea. I think that some of it has to do with wound healing. Like there's a period of time as to like typically between 4 to 6 weeks is when a wound can heal. And so you're checking in if, you know, your stitches have dissolved and there's no bleeding, because typically lochia will, which is postpartum bleeding, will resolve by that point. So a lot of it is kind of around that 6 week period is like your uterus is shrinking back down, a wound has healed, your bleeding has decreased. But there's no research to say that at 6 weeks is when you should be having sex. I think that the green light doesn't necessarily mean that like you have to. I think it's a little bit more of a yellow light of proceed with caution. And if you need to slow down and wait a little bit longer, that is totally fine. With my second son, I didn't have pain with any of my postpartum sex experiences, and I didn't have any tearing with either of my births. So I wasn't scared to have sex. I was just tired. Like there's so much pressure as a new mom that was not on the list of my priorities. So I think one is giving yourself more time to physically and emotionally heal after birth, that you don't have to have sex at 6 weeks. You can wait until longer. I think one of the other things is, make sure that your medical provider does do a postpartum exam vaginally and of your cesarean scar. So if that wound is not healed, if you still have stitches present, I would just hold off. If it hurts to just touch the external portion of the vaginal opening or even have something touching your tummy, you likely are going to be guarding your muscles and tensing up. And that's not going to help for a relaxed, pleasurable sexual experience. I do encourage people to use lubrication automatically for their first postpartum sex or the first couple. We typically have vaginal dryness because of lactation or breastfeeding. We have lower estrogen levels when we're lactating, and so that causes some vaginal dryness. So I would say it's okay to use a lubricant, proactively use a lubricant, and also go into that first postpartum sex experience thinking a little bit more of like, I'm just here to gather a little bit of information. Does it hurt when someone is touching me? Can I lie on my back comfortably, or am I more comfortable lying on my side or on my hands and knees? Is it uncomfortable with initial insertion, deeper insertion, or both? Am I having bleeding afterwards? You know, I think a little bit of like, take it very slowly, be like, I'm here to gather information and I just want to see how my body is responding, instead of expecting our bodies to show up like they did pre-pregnancy. Because again, a lot has changed. You may have more weakness and have less sensation because again, you've had lengthening or weakening of these pelvic floor muscles. You have experienced a vaginal birth for many people, and that lengthens your pelvic floor. So you may have sex and be like, gosh, it actually feels quite different. That is not unusual, but it gives you some information that, hey, I may need to work on some strengthening because I'm not quite able to get that same sensation. or my orgasms feel really weak. Orgasms are pelvic floor muscle contractions. So that may say, my pelvic floor muscles, again, another sign of weakness. I think I need to work on some strengthening. Or, wow, it's really painful with initial insertion right where I had my tear. I might need to work with a pelvic floor therapist to work on scar massage. Or we have these devices called vaginal dilators where you can kind of insert them into the vagina. They look like tampons of different sizes. And it's almost like training for a race. Like, we don't go run a half marathon without ever having stretched and trained. So we can't expect our bodies to do a big physical feat if we haven't warmed it up and stretched and trained properly. So I kind of think about gather information, see how your body feels, and then if it's great, great. If you feel like you need to make some adjustments or get a little bit of fine tuning, also fine. And you know that therapy is an option for that.
Just sounds like it's an opportunity for us to really connect and to rediscover or discover this like new, you know, body of ours, because it does change us drastically. And I don't want to scare listeners that maybe did not have kids yet. I think that this is all, again, a matter of getting the education, understanding our bodies, and being proactive about it and advocating for ourselves. And I think that it shouldn't be such a scary journey to be on.
I completely agree with you. I feel like we're talking about all of the negative things. And, you know, when people also ask me why I became a pelvic health therapist, or what I love is that I actually had two really amazing births. I had two amazing postpartum recoveries physically. And I think that when I saw like, oh, with this education, with this training, like it can actually go really smoothly and people can have less trauma and they can have better birth experiences. So it was my second pregnancy when I was like, you know what? I think that everybody deserves access to this information. Why did I just pick the right career path where I got all of this knowledge and training? Everybody should be able to access these resources and prepare for birth and prepare for postpartum and at least know the resources available for them. So I do want to let people know that birth can be lovely and it can be, not traumatic. And yes, there's a lot of things that are unanticipated. But I think, again, the research shows, and I can state this from my own experience, that the more we prepare for something and we feel empowered going into that process, the better we feel and the less trauma we feel, regardless of the outcome. So whether you're because you feel like you're the driver of the experience versus just the passenger and things are being done to you.
I feel like it also connects you deeper to your intuition. So even if it's something that you don't necessarily know exactly how to navigate, you are so connected to your body that you can intuitively know what to stay away from or what to lean into. So I completely agree. I would love to hear from your personal experience having two wonderful births. What did you do? What kind of rituals or any strategy that you use to prepare yourself and take care of yourself after giving birth?
So I'm a big data nerd. So I really went to the research and I said, okay, for me, I didn't want to have a cesarean birth. 30% of women do have cesarean births, which is totally fine. But I knew for me, certain interventions are more scary for me than pain. So I was like, I would rather deal with the pain of this experience than this fear I have of medications or surgery or whatever. So I had a doula, which I think really helped me, you know, read a lot of books. Like I read Ina May's Guide to Childbirth and How to Have an Unmedicated Birth in a Hospital. And even if I did have a medicated birth, I kind of knew what the steps would be for that. Like, okay, you get induced. Okay, then you get Pitocin, then you get the epidural. Like I didn't want to be caught off guard during the process when I'm in such a vulnerable place. So I kind of educated myself on what the birth could look like in all of these different directions. I also chose a physician who was supportive of the way I wanted to birth. At 21 weeks of pregnancy, I loved my OBGYN and I went in and I said, hey, I'm thinking about having a doula during the birth. What do you think? And she said, I think that doulas just get in the way. And I was like, oh, that's not really the energy that I want at my birth. And so I switched doctors at 21 weeks and went to a new hospital that had better rates of vaginal births and better episiotomy rates. I went to a doctor who was really open to me having a doula and having an unmedicated birth. So I think aligning with practitioners that you feel that you can, that are supportive of what you want, You can look up cesarean rates of hospitals or episiotomy rates of hospitals. You can look up maternal mortality rates of hospitals. I mean, so you can do the research to kind of just say, like, do I feel like I'm at the right place? And then, of course, I saw a pelvic floor therapist in my practice at the time where we worked on, releasing the pelvic floor muscles, doing perineal massage during the third trimester to soften some of those tissues, learning how to push properly. I modified my workouts during pregnancy, so I stopped running, I walked, I did strengthening exercises, but nothing high intensity where I was jumping or putting a lot of pressure down on my pelvic floor. So I kind of erred on the side of caution a little bit during pregnancy, and then I was really fortunate that my births went really smoothly. And then I think that that's what helped with my postpartum recovery was not having tearing. I wasn't recovering from medications or a catheter or anything like that, and I was able to kind of go home a couple days later and feel really good. Breastfeeding, way harder. I prepared for birth, like, so amazing. Breastfeeding, terrible. So, you can't get them all right. But I will say that I do think my career choice and my education helped with my birth experience.
Just listening to you is so empowering. I mean, obviously, I already had my journeys with my three kids, but just knowing that you are able to, I don't want to say control, because that's the wrong word, but to navigate gracefully through your journey of birth and postpartum. And after that, it's just, it makes me really excited. When you were talking about the births, I'm like, do I want to have another baby just so I can do it, this way? But I'll just wait for other people to keep sharing their experiences, and I'm going to live through that. But this was so, so enlightening. I truly feel that this information empowers me as a woman and makes me want to share more about it with other women and young girls. And I think that I truly feel like we're starting to really make a shift in the whole women's health section in general, which we desperately need. Because I do think that aside, not just with the pelvic floor, there's so many areas that we want to see more development and more expertise in. Is there any areas, you as a practitioner in your field, is there any other areas in the women's health field that you're just like, oh, I wish there was more advocacy there?
Yeah, I think that we're getting there. I mean, I completely agree with you that I do feel a shift. I think that, I always say the growth of my social media platforms, some of it is, the vulva costume, but it's really women wanting this information. And we are creating that shift. We are saying we want to move the needle. And I'm sure you feel this way too. I'm like, women are strong and powerful, and we have the capacity to really push for change. And I think that we're doing that. So I think that, I focus so much on pregnancy and birth because I think that that's such a huge transformation for women, that our bodies are not tended to during that period. And I think that there's a lot of preventative and proactive care we can provide. Another area I see a lot of attention to start being paid to is menopause. I think that, it's one of those things where women are getting older and their hormones are changing. And again, it was a life season where people thought, I just have to deal with hot flashes or a dry vagina or low libido. And, now we're saying, hey, what are our options? And there's a lot of therapies and medication and exercises and research that's coming up about how can we better support women through that transition. I also see it with respect to menstruation. We have better menstrual hygiene products now with respect to period underwear and menstrual cups and discs and, things to say, hey, we don't want everybody just having to slip a tampon up their sleeve and walk into the bathroom anymore or tie a shirt around their waist because they're leaking. Like, how can we, help menstruating women have a better experience? So I think in all of these arenas, we're starting to see just more focus and attention being paid to them, which one, helps us feel less alone. And two, it helps us feel more empowered that we have options instead of just dealing with something.
That's so exciting. That makes me really thankful for all the people, all women like you, that brought these topics on the table and make sure that the conversation keeps on going. Are there any books or literature that you would recommend to read about?
So interestingly enough, there are not a lot of pelvic floor books out there. I'm in the process of writing one right now. It's called Floored, A Women's Guide to Her Pelvic Floor Health Throughout All Seasons of Her Life. So that's exciting. And I think that when it comes to birth specifically, I loved Ina May's Guide to Childbirth. There's another book about, you know, birthing in a hospital. There's a book called The Vagina Bible by a physician, Dr. Jen Gunter, which is really great and just talks about the vagina and the vulva and what's normal and what's not. So I think we're starting to see more books coming out about these issues. And but, you know, if you go to a bookstore or even online, I mean, there's aisles of books about nutrition or weight mm-hmm. loss or, you know, it's like there's one vagina book. So I feel like there's room for more now. Education for now. In 2024, there'll be two. But I think that, you know, even on my website, thevaginawhisperer.com, it's blogs. I have, you know, 100 blogs on how to prepare for birth, how to prepare for postpartum recovery, how to do perineal massage, like what's normal during menopause, how to address painful sex. I think I really always envisioned, where do we go look for information? So it's been really awesome to create something where people can go and read these blogs that are so focused on this specific topic instead of kind of buried somewhere else into like how to have better orgasms. You know, I think it's, we're trying to kind of take it away from everything just being so sexual and it also, and really addressing just quality of life issues with, you know, day-to-day functions like peeing, pooping, and menstruation.
Powerful. And for the viewers and our listeners that want to find out more about your work, where can we find you?
So on social media, on Instagram, I am The Vagina Whisperer, and it's the.vagina.whisper. On TikTok, I'm The Vag Whisperer, because TikTok doesn't like the word vagina. And then my website, as I mentioned, is thevaginawhisperer.com, where I have tons of educational blogs, free guides for your pelvic floor, and an entire workout platform just for pelvic floor and core exercises.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Sarah, for your service and for sharing so much wisdom and information. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for watching this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't miss my newest episode right here. And if you're listening to the podcast on Apple or Spotify, please go and leave a review with your biggest takeaway. I love reading your thoughts. And if you have any suggestions for guests or topics, you can leave them in the comment section. And always, always remember, you are not alone.